you for each of us is welcome here. And if I say anything in the course of my speech in our time together that lands as somehow othering or off-putting or exclusory in any way, please let me know. And the best way to do that is to send me an email to still have more time to think about it. And we could have an exchange. My email address is gracefishermft@gmail.com. And those of you who know me and have emailed me know I'm not that quick to respond. So I'm just naming that as a truth and just ask for your patience. But really, I think I've shared this before, but I love this class. It's definitely been a marker for me on Thursdays for 15, 17 years, and really hold this as a chance for me to learn from you as well. So welcoming all of that. Logistically, if you are here for the first time, we will do an arriving sit shortly. That will last about 10 minutes. From there, we'll move into a movement practice that may be walking meditation, or it may be another kind of movement, depending on your body's capacities. We will come back from that. We'll sit together for a half an hour. After that, I'll talk for a bit, and then we'll have a chance to share in the group, again, as an opportunity to learn from each other, to hear the other many, many wise voices and wise hearts that are here. Susanna, welcome back from Mali. So wonderful and just amazing to have you here today. And again, just my attention going to scanning who's where, and just loving being able to see that. So thank you for sharing that. And how about we move into the arriving sit? So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and just to let yourself arrive, whatever you are in the middle of 10 minutes ago before you clicked into this class. Letting that go, putting it outside the temple doors, as it were. And just letting yourself check in. How's the body on this day? It may be helpful to put a hand on the heart, hand on the belly, just as a way of welcoming, like, I'm here in this body. May I be present to the experience of aliveness in this moment. For this time that we've given each of us collectively as this Thursday Sangha to be on retreat together, allowing yourself to drop into a sense of there's nowhere else to be. There's nothing else to do. The hard part's already been done. You're here. You've made the commitment. And being able to accept the generosity that you have extended to yourself and to each one of us. And can we just arrive and be available? Oh, this moment, this breath, this body. And again, checking in, how is the body? And some of us may be sitting in a lot of physical pain. Some of us are going to be sitting with chronic illness, terminal illness. Some of us are sitting in perfect health, right? All of it. Okay. Can we meet ourselves, meet this body with a sense of gentle curiosity? How is it? A gentle compassion. Oh, it's like this. And extending these energies of generosity, compassion, acceptance. Okay, in this moment, this body is just like this. Can we put aside the fight that wants it to be otherwise? Just even trying that attitude, that offering, try it on for a couple minutes. How's it feel? Can we expand our capacity to meet ourselves with that gentleness, gentling ourselves into the moment? Oh, it's just like this. This body feels like that, aches and pains, puts asleep, whatever it is, headache, toothache. Feeling our points of contact with the earth. Yeah. where what parts of our body are touching the ground, the earth, as a way of anchoring ourselves in this moment. This body is connecting to the earth, feeling the earth's energies. And letting there be a sense of belonging. Oh yeah, in this body, on this earth, this animal body resting on the earth. And then from this place, just noticing the mind, how is the mind in this moment? And some of us may be sitting with a very distracted mind that's all over the place, a mind that's really harsh to ourselves, a mind that's in planning mode or judging, comparing mind. Okay. Again, the sense of, can we meet ourselves in this moment? This mind is like this. And it never ceases to amaze me that we have this capacity to observe the thinking mind and the incredible freedom that can come from, oh, I can watch my thoughts. That can be so compelling and feel so true and so real. And yet, thoughts in and of themselves, ephemeral like clouds. A line I will never forget from John Travis shared with me early in my retreat sitting days, as we come, we take our seats and watch the theater of the mind. Being able again to keep a good portion of our attention, our energies in the body, and then just watching, oh, in this moment, the mind is like this. Again, no, not needing to make it a problem. Oh, it's just like this. Okay. Just noticing in this moment, the thinking mind is like this. And setting aside any judgments or wishing that it were otherwise, just like, okay, we have the strength, capacity to watch. And then the final exploration in this arriving sit is to check in with the heart. And it may be helpful to put one hand over the heart, two hands at heart center. Just to breathe in, how is the heart on this day? And some of us may be sitting with a really heavy heart, a heart that's scared or stressed. Okay. If we can tap into this global sangha that reaches from often from Canada down the west coast of the US into Minnesota, New Mexico, up along the eastern coast of the States, into Europe. That's a whole lot of space. And can you let yourself tap into the vastness of this Sangha, which is a reflection of the vastness of these teachings that have been running for 2,600 years? And whatever we may be holding in the heart, sorrow, fear, we offer that to the circle. Not to be feeling like we have to hold whatever it is in our own bodies, but okay, there's all this space of these beautiful hearts in the Sangha, the landscape that supports us wherever we are. And staying close to how the heart may be responding to what's happening internally in our interior landscape. And then expanding the awareness into our ever widening circle of concerns, that first ring in of our beloveds. Those of us who have family members and loved ones who are suffering in the way that as humans we suffer. And how that impacts our heart. And can we listen into the sensation of the heart rather than the story? Is there a sense of buoyancy or suffer or heaviness, or weightiness? Sometimes it's hard to feel, which is why I like to have my hands there as a way of sweetheart. How is it? How is it in the heart just now? And then allowing there to be an extension into the bar from Rilke, our ever widening circles of concern. How's the heart in response to our neighbors, our communities, what's happening here in the US, globally? How's the heart? Again, feeling into this sangha of beautiful, strong hearts. How it is to be a human alive on the 7th of July, 2022. So in a few minutes, we'll transition into the movement practice. And the Buddha taught four postures: standing, walking, lying down, and sitting. And we can tend to feel like, oh, the sitting, that's the real practice, the formal practice. And I want to dissuade us of that notion to expand. No, enlightenment can happen in any of the postures. And in the movement practice, it's being able to work with this awareness practice of how is it to keep the attention in the body as we move through space. And if the body does not have the capacity to walk, it can be just a raising and lowering of the arm, feeling into the movements of the muscles, how the arm moves through the currents of the air. If walking is an option, and to be able to typically it's like a 10 or 15 pace walk. I like to take a hard stop and check in the question, like, where am I energetically? Where am I? Am I distracted by dogs barking or a dog hair or the dishes that I might think I should be doing, or to check my phone? And to just ask, what might it be like to give yourself permission to stay on retreat, right? To stay in the practice of 30 of us that will be doing the movement practice, to feel into that sangha and notice again how it is to keep that attention in the body as we move. It can help to put the attention in the feet. Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful instructions of, with one foot, I'm blessing the earth, with another, I'm being blessed, blessing, blessed, blessing, blessed. If the mind is really busy and that job isn't enough, can be counting 1, 2, 3, 4, or just noting the lifting and placing of your feet. And I'll stop there for the instructions. So please, however you spend the time and whatever movement practice, enjoy, may it be nurturing. We will come back at 10:40 California West Coast time and move right into the sit. So delighted that you're here. Please enjoy the movement practice and we'll be back in 20 minutes. Thanks so much. However you spent that time, as I mentioned it before, that it was nurturing. So move into the sit and invite you all to close your eyes and just check in. How's the body? Can we allow the body to come into a posture that allows her to feel upright and alert? Again, connecting into the earth's energies and the energies of the heavens, as Jack, I don't know if he still says it, but so we take our seats halfway between heaven and earth and just allowing ourselves again to ground into the grounding, nurturing energies of the earth that supports us, and also the energies of the heavens. It's like we can plug in. Likewise, taking our seats in this global sangha, those of us here today and our Dharma sisters who aren't able to be here joining us. And again, allowing yourself to take your place in the circle. Yeah, all parts of you. All parts. For the anchor today, I'm going to invite us just to stay in the body. And this might mean allowing the attention to rest on the breath. the movement of the inflow, the outflow of the wind element. Yeah. And since I sat that concentration retreat, I've loved, I think it was Guy Armstrong's invitation of just the half breath, concentrating on the half breath in, just that pause, the half breath out, that exhale. I feel like it's a fabulous setup for success. I can pay attention for, for half a breath. Great. So letting the attention just to play with it. Okay, the breath in, breath out. Yeah. Can there be this rhythm, this dance of the movement, whether we track the breath through the nose, the mouth, the rising of the chest, the expansion in the belly, or again to pull in from Guy, can the whole can we play with the whole body? How the whole body moves in response to the in breath, to the out breath, and staying open to that. For some of us, the breath is not neutral, in which case that's not necessarily a helpful anchor. So the attention can just rest more on the on a physical sensation, perhaps of the hand resting on the leg. The hands are holding each other. Just being able to pay attention, again, gentle curiosity of, oh, how is it if I pay attention to the pressure, the temperature of my hands holding each other, or my hands on my legs? It will change. This beautiful invitation of being able to rest in this impermanence of an in-breath and out-breath, the impermanence of a physical sensation. Some might feel like, oh, no, no, this is going to stay here forever. Yeah, it can feel that way. And can we allow our attention to become subtle enough? Oh, are there changes here? Can I pay attention to those subtle changes in sensations, in temperatures? And we know what the mind does. It generates thoughts. Some are seductive. Some are repetitive. Some are tedious. Some are fascinating. Some are comparing, judging, all of that. Okay. Can we redirect our attention back to, hey, check out this half breath in and that exhale. We rest again, the attention on this, the feeling of the hands on the legs. We can get pulled into a thought. At some point we realize, oh wait, thinking about something. Okay. And then bringing that, relocating, redirecting that attention back to the anchor, to the half breath in, half breath out. Or that wider lens of attention to sensation. And as always, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seat, and we see how it is to sit with ourselves, to sit in the company of our Dharma sisters, as we cultivate this amazing capacity to stay with ourselves. And noticing, oh, in this moment, it's just like this, this in-breath, half-breath in, half-breath out. We can begin again each moment. Yeah. So, in whatever place you are, may the practice hold you in the Sangha. So welcome. I'm so happy that we're able to sit together today. And today I want to talk about patience. Some of you may sort of what happened in Highland Park, the shootings on the 4th of July, the parade. And yet since we're 7 days into July and there have been 300 injuries or fatalities, so mass shootings. And this is in America, this is what's happening. There's no quick fix. Over the years, we've done, as I say each time, we've done all these rituals. Yes. And for me, well, the dogs is an immediate sense of working with patients, but the sense of, okay, this is the, these are the times, and whether wherever we are on the political spectrum of things, these are interesting times. And for some of us, they may not be how we want them to be, right? With all that is happening in the world, all the ways in which things are unfolding, watching our, the reactivity that can come up, and I'll speak for myself, of the sense of this is not okay. And there's truth in that, depending again, where we are and what our beliefs are, what our values are, and how do we move skillfully with these are the times that we're in. What's happening with our climate? What's happening in the world again, in all of its machinations? What's happening internally within ourselves? The stress of 3 years in or wherever we are in the chronology of COVID time. These are trying times. Right? People that I talk to in my professional role and socially, people are tired on many levels. People are anxious, many reasons, right? So this is not news to anyone. And how can we lean into the teachings as we do each week, every day of, okay, how do we do this? Again, these practices have been around for 2,600 years. Humankind has been through a lot in, over the millennia. And I'm going to draw upon, as many of you know, one of my favorite books, Crossing the Floods. Somewhat humorously, I couldn't find the actual book, so I had to turn to my printed out version. This is a book, for those of you who don't know, it's called Crossing the Floods by Ajahn Suchito. I love it. It's about the perfections of the heart, the paramis. It is an online book that's available. Totally recommend it. I personally cannot read books online, so I printed it out. And he has this beautiful teachings on patience. And I'm going to draw from his book and then from Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise. And these two masters talking about how can we relate to patience as a softening of the heart, as a way of, again, gentling in, as I was saying earlier, of these are the times we're in. And how do we allow ourselves to stay in our bodies, grounded? I feel like as I've, over the week, playing with patience and I don't know what to say, sort of, I don't know if it's the same, different side of the coin or the sisterhood of patience and equanimity. I think at the core, very similar energies of being able to, oh, okay, it's just like this. And kante is the Pali word for patience, and it can be variously translated as forbearance or courage, determinations, being with things as they are, right? And Upekkha has the Pali word for equanimity, the sense of the 30,000 foot view, the grandmotherly eyes, or sitting down in the middleness of it all. Energetically, to me, particularly of late, they feel very similar. And may it be so, right? The more teachings, the more aspects, more tools that we have that can allow us to find ways of settling into, okay, in this moment, it is like this. The beautiful line from Christina Feldman that there's no, which I'm not going to get quite right, the magnitude of what's being asked of us is only as great as the moment. Moment to moment. And again, I love the guise of the, it's the half breath. I can do that. I can stay present for half breath. Great. Okay. So we're allowing ourselves to set ourselves up for success. Yeah. To not come to the practice feeling like it should be this way. It should be that way. I'm like, oh, sweetie, may this be a refuge, right? A place of peace where the mind is jangly enough and we can get hijacked when the mind is on sort of the fiery aspect of depression, or enraged, or just sorrowful, or joyful, right? There's a lot to manage if we look at it that way. Being able to get spacious enough, which is why I'm not subtle in suggesting the idea of taking comfort in the vastness of our Sangha. I keep saying it over and over again as a way of like, ooh, there's a lot of space here in which we can relax into, okay, this, it's like this. Like it, don't like it. Okay, that's the practice of the Vedanas. Things are unpleasant, things are pleasant. Things are neutral, in which case we might not even pay attention. A beautiful way to fold in working with equanimity and patience of sitting with a really unpleasant, right? That gives us enough space. Maybe I'll do that as a guided meditation next time to be able to just work with, okay, it's just like this. It may be pleasant. It may be unpleasant. Yes, that's how it is to be human, right? There's no escaping suffering, dukkha, pleasant experiences, unpleasant experiences. And we can be conditioned in a way to believe, well, if you do everything right, then everything's going to work out. Like, no. Being able to step out of what that kind of conditioning to say, okay, how can I expand into, okay, it's like this. And can I have that long enduring mind? And I remember when I first heard that phrase, I was like, ooh, that sounds terrible. In the sense of, as I was hearing it, kind of the enduring, like we endure, which patience can sometimes, like more of a shadowy side of patience, like we'll just bear with it until it ends, or I'll endure this until it ends, right? And the teacher like, no, it's not about a means to an end. Like I'll bear through this traffic jam and then it will clear to, on the most mundane level of where we can get impatience, but it's much more, okay, how can we adopt it as a means of moving in the world, that it's not a compromise, right? I'll make this deal with whatever, I'll sit with it, I'll be patient, but I still have some part of me is an eye on the clock of when is it going to be over, and just to be able to keep turning towards with the phenomenal amount of courage that it can take to say, okay, I'm going to sit with this, right? So I'm going to read a little bit, if you'll bear with me, from Suchita's book. About, if you could see it, you would laugh, because they're about 20 tabs. The practice with patience means bearing with dukkha without the expectation that it will go away. And actually, I want to back it up just a moment. This is what he says early on in his introduction of Kante. The three stages of developing the paramis, and again, perfections of the heart, of which patience, others, as I've mentioned in other talks, are truthfulness, equanimity, metta, virya, energy, resolve, and so on. I won't go through the list, but those are some of the perfections of the heart. And again, so the book is called Crossing the Floods, which is this metaphor that he brings in. In developing the three stages of developing these paramis, the initiating stage when you build your boat of right intention, the gathering stage of meeting the flood when you hit the white water of negativity, seductive reasoning, wild impulses, and doubt, and the completing stage in which your boat comes through bigger, deeper, and having jettisoned some of the unnecessary cargo. This process is very clear with the perfection of Kante, the patience, the forbearance, or acceptance. This one really moves through the white water. The Buddha famously declared Kante to be the supreme purification practice. Patience deals with checking emotional reactions, but it's not a denial of emotional intelligence. Patience has the gut knowledge that recognizes that a problem or a pain is not something to run away from or get flustered by or be self-pitying about. It has the wisdom to know that we have to prioritize the steps through which we can resolve suffering. Patience holds us with the suffering in a spacious way, encouraging the mind to open, and an open mind both feels more peaceful in itself and more readily sees the causes of its suffering. So this invitation of how can we cultivate step by step a sense of an open mind? Where do we feel that there's enough inner peace to be able to do that? And sometimes the mind can we can do that on our own. We come to Sangha for support with that, or we can work with others when sometimes it's like we can't get out of our own way enough, which happens. Okay. Being able to rest in if that's what's needed. Okay. How do we find the support that we need such that we can hold that intention, that particular North Star of an open mind that can meet what's coming, what's here, what's present. At the core of our suffering is the crucial point where we don't want emotional pain. Our resistance can throw us into a fit of doubt, a lack of confidence, and the feeling that we are useless. In that loss of balance, so again, this way that equanimity comes in, the equanimity is being able to stay steady, have a sense of balance amidst all that's happening. So the balance comes in, the patience is there to stay open of all the emotional pain or physical pain or the ways in which we're reacting to pain. Natural response is, oh no, I don't want that. And all the energy that is created to push it aside is a drain, right? So in that loss of balance, the mind thrashes around and creates either a self who is a victim or a self who is to blame. But when we get right to the point, we can see that what's actually there is the wriggling in order to deflect the pain in our hearts. We blame others, we blame ourselves, we blame the world, past karma or anything else. We search for the scapegoats to carry the pain. All this is the mind resisting or wiggling away from painful feelings. And in that process, the mind loses the strength and clarity that would enable it to bear with or even let go of the feeling. And I love his teachings because it's so much of like, yes, of course, there's no need to just being able to understand this is just a movement, an understandable movement of the mind to be like, that feels terrible. Let's not go there. And the Annie Lamott line that I quote all the time when she says, my mind is like a bad neighborhood. I try not to go there alone. And that's true. And I know this for myself in my 20s when I was working through an awful lot of trauma. I could not have been there by myself. I needed someone there with me as a guide, as someone to say, it's okay. It's okay. So being able to pay attention to our own capacities and when do we need help? That the belief, I don't know. This may be a little bit scandalous to say, but sometimes we need more than just a practice in terms of our support and being able to be accompanied. That we need our Sangha sisters to accompany us, even though we might not physically get to be together, being able to feel into this space that's loving and supportive and the wisdom that's here collectively. Where can we look to be accompanied on this journey of wanting to stay open, have an open heart such that we can meet what's happening with that sense of, okay, it's like this. Instead of creating that reactivity of problems of, no, it shouldn't be like this and this isn't okay. And all that chatter that does not help us, well, I'll speak for myself, does not help me stay in a place of steady responsiveness. It just has me up here and escalated and then I can't sleep and I'm all agitated and grouchy, which is really not how I want to be moving in the world. So looking at, and there are times for that, right? That this is not simply about, it's not about numbing anything or shutting down to anything or becoming a doormat. It's just how can we, and I think this feels true, how in times like these that we're in and that what we're looking to, it seems in the relatively near future, we need to be as skillful as we can. These times are calling for us to bring our skills to bear. And the skills that we can gain when we sit on the cushion or we do our walking meditation or we say hello to someone when we're walking on the street, we develop those skills together in community here. And they're essential for our own ability to meet each day and essential collectively for what we're putting into our communities, the way we move in the world. We need this. Yeah, times are hard. And by this, I mean these practices that say, hey, we humans have been doing this forever. We can do this. Here's a way we can have an open heart and a steady mind. Well, okay, a little bit more. One more. Okay. Patience may at first strike you as teeth grinding, hang on till it's over quality, right? But this would not be perfect patience, because in such a case, the mind is still longing for the end of the experience, as I was talking about before. Aversion has not really been relinquished. Perfect patience, the parami of patience, has the soft and heartful strength of having all the time in the world to rest in an experience. It relaxes the edge of time. The transformative power of patience is such that as the mind relaxes its defensiveness and bristling, the annoying delay becomes an occasion for spaciousness, and the other person's irritating behavior is something you can meet with empathy as their unfortunate problem. And it includes the wisdom to know that one just has to bear with. And when there is enough occasion to act in a clear and a responsible way, that's possible. Patience is not meant to transform you into a doormat, but to act as a fire break on the immediate impulses that will not bring, I'll leave it there, to act as a fire break. And I love that. Again, it's so practical, which is why I love this book, of just, okay, being able to work with and not deny those reactivity, the impulses will come, the reactivity will come. Yes. Okay. But how not to be led by that. And this fire break that can come in and be like, wait, where am I? Is this helping me move into more of a place where my thoughts are going, move into a place of ease, or is it stressing me out and creating this kind of ongoing sea of irritability? Acting as if there's all the time in the world. And that's pretty radical. So often it's the to-do list. I'm never going to get it done. And I've referenced the book a couple of weeks ago, 4,000 weeks, this notion that if we are lucky enough to live to be in our mid 80s, it's about 4,000 weeks. And this notion of time and the to-do list that we have. And the author of the book was like, yeah, that to-do list, never going to get it done. In the book of the Paramis, Ajahn Sucitto talks about as energy, wise energy, virya, also, you have that to-do list, you're never going to get it done. Let it go. Right? That notion of if I can organize myself enough, then I'll get it all done. Like, no, then your list will just get longer. So being able to have enough patience to say, like, okay, this is how it is. There's this amount of time. How can I relate to it in a way that this is enough, but the time that I have is enough time. Yeah. The feeling of time is a measure of what's happening in the nervous system, which is why one system is always speeding up. There's never enough time, right? That the idea, the mental construct, there's not enough time, brings along the nervous system. Like, oh my God, there's not enough time. And we're all anxious. Try practicing with the phrase, the work can never be finished. Work can never be finished. And there's enough time. Kind of the juxtaposition of two odd invitations, yet nevertheless, an invitation to alter how we hold it. And being able to relax back into that exhale. And it's just like this. Yeah. Not necessarily our first response, but one when we can try it on. I say it all the time in the different ways of the sits, to be able to allow us, and for myself, of course, by dropping into it's just like this, it allows us to put down the fight. Yeah, there can be a lot right now to fight about. So I want to share a little bit from, this is Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise. Again, stickers everywhere. Okay. He writes, when we're patient with our suffering, rather than bemoaning it, we see that suffering is expansive, connecting us warmly to the world and to others. When the suffering is ours instead of mine, it's not suffering. My sorrow, my grief, my fear is painful, yet it's also sweet because I share it with everyone. This is how the Bodhisattvas understand the third noble truth of the Buddha, the end of suffering. To them, the end of suffering doesn't mean the end of pain, of failure, the end of loss or alienation or fear, but rather the transformation of suffering into solidarity and love. I'm going to reread that. The end of suffering doesn't mean the end of physical pain or the end of failure, loss, alienation, or fear. but rather the end of suffering is the transformation of suffering into solidarity and love. And this can take patience, right? This ability to expand into, oh, right, it's not just me. It requires that open mind. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. And just notice there's a lot of me talking and how your body is, what resonates. And bringing the attention back into your body, sitting as you are. And I'm going to ask each of us to call to mind a situation where there's a lot of impatience. And again, it can be something like you're standing in line or you're in traffic. Or it can be impatience with someone that you love, live with, or you're in relationship with. And they say, well, why can't they do this better? Why can't they do it faster? You know, this, the ways in which impatience can come in. And it can be impatience with the world. Why is it still like this? How can it still be like this? And just notice, to check in, and not going for the biggest experience of impatience, but just something that has enough of a charge, and just noticing what that feels like in the body. Again, touching it lightly, but having enough of a charge there to understand, oh yeah, this is what impatience feels like. There's a constriction in the forehead or jaw, the chest, the belly, shoulders get tight, or shoulders rounded. We think, I know for myself, with that impatience is a sense of my rightness. It should be like this. It should be how I want it. And in that is a lot of me, right? A lot of selfing, self-referential about me. And then just to play with, again, this spaciousness of our global Sangha here, the spaciousness of a blue sky overhead, the spaciousness of the expanse of an ocean. Can we imagine orienting from that place as we think about this person that we may feel impatient with, or again, playing with, standing in line or being in traffic? Or our impatience with the world. That the moral arc of the universe does bend towards justice, but it doesn't bend on our own time frame. Right? Humans have been on this earth a very long time. Can we ease into this notion of there is enough time? Noticing if there's a pushback against it, an aversion, no, there's not. Okay, making space for that. And keep allowing there to be, okay, and space for this too. Space of the Sangha, space of the blue sky, space of the ocean, this too. Can we fold in our need for things to be a certain way? Oh, that can be an expression of impatience. Can I set that down and ease this body of mine, this mind, into an open awareness of, oh, sweetheart, it is just like this. And notice what happens in the body. There may be a change, maybe not. And what might it be like to move in the world from that place, waking up in the morning and saying, I have all the time I need today. I have enough space in my day, in my mind, to stay open, to meet the world as it is,
and allow myself to touch into that suffering that unites us. This is part of the human experience. How might it be like to move from that place? So I'm going to stop there. And thank you so much for your kind attention.